Yeah, so in this talk, I will discuss about energy transport for thick holographic brains. It is based on this paper with this archive number with Kostas Bakas, Giuseppe Policastro, Shira Chapman, and Tal Schwarzman, who is a PhD student in Ben Gurion University in Beersheba. So this is briefly the outline. I will just give a few motivations for this discussion and give a brief review of what we need to use about two-dimensional interface conformal field theories, which will be the main topic of the discussion. Then I will define two holographic models that I call the thin brain and the thick brain model. This thick brain, in the end, is what we want to study. And finally, I will conclude and discuss future developments. Starting from the motivations, very briefly, why we should care in general about defects. They have really a lot of applications in many realms of physics. So let me just give you a list of many applications. So defects provide extended probes in quantum field theory. So they arise in the context of high energy physics. On the other hand, they also allow to bridge the gap between theoretical realizations that you can perform in high energy physics and concrete settings that you can find in condensed matter physics. For example, they appear for quantum Hall liquids or impurities in spin chains and many other settings that you can find in experiments. From the point of view of ADS-CFT or holography, they appear as dynamical brains in anti-de Sitter, for example, or as constructions that you can perform in string theory or in supergravity. And another reason to study defects is that they play an important role in quantum information physics, because, for example, properties of entanglement entropy, complexity, also discussions concerning the islands and quantum extremal surfaces involve defects, and they can play an important role to obtain phase transitions or to study the reaction of systems to the presence of defects. So this is just a quick list of motivations. Now let me focus more specifically to the second part, two-dimensional interface conformal field theories. And also here, very briefly, an interface is a codimension one object that splits a system in two parts. In this talk, I will focus on the case where we are splitting two conformal field theories on the left and right side. And there is an interface that preserves one copy of the Virasoro algebra out of the original two copies. Now, in these two systems, as usual, we have an holomorphic and anti-holomorphic stress tensor that we can define on the left and right sides. And as usual, they are conserved in the bulk. But at the interface, it is possible to define other two currents. Let's say T total and T relative. T total is the sum, and T relative is some combination of this form. And it turns out that only this combination is preserved at the interface, while the other one is not conserved in general. And this will be the condition that I will apply for all the studies in this talk. I will assume that this current is conserved at the boundary, at the interface, and this restricts the original symmetries of the theory to a subgroup.
You start from two dimension, you have codimension one effect.
Yes. In this talk, I will only talk about two boundary dimensional interface conformal field theories. And the reason will be clear soon, because in two dimension, there will be some result about universality that I will explain in a few moments that will be important for the discussion in this talk and does not apply in general to higher dimensions. And we can briefly discuss in the end possible generalizations to higher dimensions. So I will assume that this current is conserved. And now... Yes?
Linear combination, the relative.
I think that this is a particular combination that gives still a primary for, I think that a formal way is that you can use the so-called folding trick to map this system to a system with a boundary given by CFT left times this conjugate. And this current, I think it is a primary for this boundary theory. So it is still a primary, but can be shown to not be conserved. So this is why these are the two spin two currents that are relevant in these kind of discussions. Okay. Now, briefly, brief facts about two-dimensional interface conformal field theories. On each side, of course, we know very well that two-point functions of the stress tensor are fixed by conformal invariants in terms of the usual central charge. And of course, this also is for the right copy of the theory. But the main point of this talk will be now to focus on correlation functions between one copy of the left stress tensor and one copy of the right stress tensor, because it turns out that this two-point function can also be fixed by interface conformal field theory. And now there is a new coefficient. So, okay, the factor of 1 over 2 is just convention, but what is important is that there is a new coefficient that I call C left-right that encodes properties related to the transport of energy between the left and the right field theory. It is related to the fact that now we have an interface that separates the two conformal field theories. This is a new independent data. It is independent of the central charges. And therefore, what I want to study in this talk will be an holographic investigation of this coefficient that has not been studied a lot in the literature so far.
The interface is something that you will later explain is your brain.
Yes, so exactly. Later I will consider two holographic models that will reproduce this interface as a brain in anti-de Sitter, we will see.
There are no constraints, what should be the properties of left and right CTs. You can basically merge them.
Yes.
There
are a few restrictions given, for example, by average null energy condition. We restrict, can restrict this C left right. I will comment it later, but except for that, they can be quite general. Yes. What I want to do will be to study this coefficient and how we can extract this coefficient. One possibility is to consider a scattering experiment. So you will really send a plane wave solution, for example, and study the transmission and reflection of energy. So here left simply refers to the fact that I'm sending a wave from the left side and I study the transmission. I can do the same experiment also coming from the right. And of course, due to conservation of energy, they are related by this condition. And now in particular, the transmission coefficient turns out to be, and this is a result of a field theory computation, is given by this expression, which means that if I'm able to measure the transmission coefficient for a scattering experiment, then I will be able to extract information about C left right. And so what I will do will be really to perform scattering experiments in holography to extract this kind of coefficient. Yes. Let me see. Okay, nothing. And what?
Stefan,
yes.
How is therefore, you said it at the beginning, but the final algebra is just one Virasoro?
Yes.
The right are the two primary, the two stress tensors?
Yeah, I think that this combination is the only one remaining, giving the only copy of the Virasoro. In this talk, we will only need the global part, which is sufficient to fix this. Symmetries in two dimensions with the interface, it will be SO 2,1 symmetry. But yes, in principle, you have all one copy of the Virasoro algebra.
And is that the one that has the central charge? The thing of CLM R as the central charge for the symmetries, or are there some matter fields that contribute to the central charge? I'm just trying to understand what CLR is.
I think since anyway, this C left right is really. Here I have written this in terms of left and right copies, but in the end it can be encoded only in terms of the T total. So I think that I don't know if you really have to think this as a central charge, but it is the data encoded by T total. So I guess this is an interpretation.
To have, for example, the plane defined to the right from the interface, or it's defined only to the left. Where is T-Web defined? Is defined like on the whole plane or? defined by to the left of the interface.
So T left is defined, I'm sending a plane wave, and later I will also write the explicit expression, but the idea is that the transmission, the part of the wave transmitted to the right is what I define T left.
No, I'm talking about T, like stress energy time.
Sorry, yes.
Is it defined to the left from the interface, or it's defined on the whole plane?
So it is defined on the left, and it is defined on the right, but...
When you write T total is equal to the sum, what do you mean?
I think that this is better formulated when you do this the folding trick to go to this picture where you have a unique space time where you have defined the product of the left and right sides, so you have that both of them are defined in this space, and then you this relation means that you are studying them close to the boundary, how they behave close to the boundary, I think.
Object like on a brain itself.
Yes. So, what I will do will be now to compute this T left. But now, what is important about two dimensions is a result about universality. So, it has been proven in a couple of papers by Quella and other authors in 2007, and by Meineri and other authors. In 2019, that from a field theory side, that there is a universality property in the sense that the computation of the transmission coefficient does not depend on the way in which you realize your scattering experiment, but is a universal property of the two-dimensional interface conformal field theory. I mean that it will not depend on the frequency of the wave that I'm using, and it will not depend even on the fact that I can generate these plane waves using scalar modes, vector modes, transverse traceless modes. I can use whatever way I prefer to produce the scattering experiment. And in the end, in two dimensions, this coefficient will be independent of these details. So this is an important result that I will need to use for our derivation. Okay, this concludes the review of the two-dimensional interface conformal field theories. So if you have questions, otherwise we move to the holographic models. Okay, so now let's define what is the thin brain model. As I mentioned, I want to study this coefficient holographically, and the simplest setup, which is a bottom-up setup, is given by this system, where you have to imagine you have your conformal field theory on the left and conformal field theory on the right. And now the interface will be represented. So, and these are defined, I want now to give a holographic description. So now I will move to anti-de Sitter space, empty anti-de Sitter space in three dimensions. And the interface will be represented holographically by a brain. So I have my two independent systems with the brain encoding the interface. And now I want to glue these brains together in such a way that when I glue the brain at the boundary, it means that I'm gluing the interfaces. I really want this kind of picture at the boundary. And in anti-de Sitter, this corresponds to gluing the two brains. So the action is very simple, is the simplest setup. So you have a left and right theories with coordinates left and right. And this has ADS radius L left, ADS radius L right, and the brain F the same tension sigma. So the action is simply given by this expression, which is scalar plus the cosmological constant plus the same where you exchange left and right. And then you have a codimension one boundary term where this is the induced metric on the brains. And it turns out that if you study the equations of motion, the Einstein's equations, of course, empty anti-de Sitter space is a solution for the two bulk regions separately. But now, since you also have the brain, you need to impose the Einstein's equations also close to the brain, which means that I need to impose the so-called Israel matching conditions, a boundary condition for the brain. These conditions correspond to impose that the induced metric on the brain evaluated from the left and from the right is the same. And then a condition on the jump of the extrinsic curvature of the brain. So let me write and then quickly comment. Where by the bracket Kij, I just mean the quantity evaluated on the left minus the quantity evaluated on the right. So these are conditions that simply tell you that the matrix, the induced matrix, needs to be continuous and that you have a jump in the extrinsic curvature. They arise from studying Einstein's equation close to the discrete brain. Now, if you impose these matching conditions, they become very simple equations of this form. So let's say that this gives an angle theta left, and this gives an angle pi over 2 plus theta right. These conditions simply correspond to an equation of this kind. I am imposing both of them. So, So this means that once I fix the ADS radii on the left and right regions and the tension of the brain, then I'm able to find the constant value theta left and theta right where the brain are located. So this means that at the end, the very simple solution of this system is that the brains are located at constant theta left and theta right. So this is the background geometry, but now what I want to do.
What is state? How do you think about state? So you are talking about the brain at an angle. Can you write a metric on
Yes,
So what is state?
Yeah, so the for example, in Poincaré, you can take in this region the metric in Poincaré coordinate. So let's say that everything is for the left side. Let me use xi because later I will use z for other stuff. So xi is the radial coordinate of ADS space, and I think that I think that we are introducing so I think that xi cos theta and xi sin theta. Sorry. Let me remember for a moment. I think that it should be an equation like this. So if z is the radial coordinate on an ADS2 slice and theta, so the idea is that when you have empty anti de Sitter space, it can be written. There is a coordinate system where it can be written in terms of ADS2 slices. So this is a very particular way to write ADS space, but it will be useful for later. And on ADS2, the coordinates are z and t. And I think theta is the angular coordinate running along this coordinate, and z and t are along the brain. So this theta, except for the shift, is the same theta. Okay, so this means that at the end, the brain is located at some constant ADS2 slice angular coordinate in this coordinate system.
The initial constructions, what are the assumptions of the safety, like locality, unitary? I mean, it's general what you're doing.
Yes, this is general, but now this is the simplest bottom-up model where you assume that this is the simplest setting where you can reproduce some holographic result, and you want to study the transmission and see what you are able to reproduce holographically. Later, but this is still really a bottom-up approach where you are just doing the simplest construction. In fact, my idea is that later, what I will call the thick brain model will be instead a continuous geometry with a dilaton field that that should be dual to two-dimensional interface conformal field theories. And my main example can be Janus in three dimensions, which is a geometry that is known to come from higher dimensions and to have a dual. So the idea is that to move later to a setup where the dual is better defined, this one instead is a simplest, a simple setting where you can try to test what you're able to reproduce holographically. But this will be important because later I will use a trick where the result that I will find with this method can be applied to study more general systems. So this is why I am reviewing this model, because some part of these results will be used later. So now this is a background, but now we want to study some scattering because we need to study a transmission coefficient. So we really want to put on the boundary some plane waves that are scattered and want to study this transmission coefficient. Let me see how I'm doing this time. So what we want to do is to add a perturbation, which means that we want to introduce now a stress tensor at the boundary that gives you a scattering experiment, the plane waves. And in order to do this perturbation, what you need to do is really to change the boundary stress tensor. On the gravity side, this means that I will also need to change the geometry. And in order to do that, I use holographic renormalization, which means that I need to go to Pfeffer-Mangram gauge, Pfeffer-Mangram coordinates, in order to be able to introduce a dual stress tensor and then see the consequences on the geometry. So it turns out that for empty ADS in three dimensions, the most general expression that you can write in Pfeffer-Mangram gauge is an expression of this form. So again, now I'm writing a metric without labels. This, you need to do this for the left and for the right copies separately. Xi squared over L squared. Oops. So let me explain what we are doing. So these factors of four are just conventions useful. W plus minus are just convenient light cone coordinates, combination of U and T coordinates. But the important point about ADS in three dimensions is that the expansion stops at order four. So it truncates, you don't need to go, there are no higher orders. Also, this G0 is just the background solution that gives you empty ADS space in Poincaré coordinates, for example. G2 is the quantity dual to the boundary stress tensor. So G2, except for some factors, is proportional to the expectation value of the dual stress tensor. And G4 turns out to be also expressed only in terms of G2 in this way. And G0. So in the end, the only independent data that I need to include is the perturbation G2, which will give me a dual stress tensor. So now I need to impose that the stress tensor contains the plane waves for my scattering experiment. So what I do is really explicitly introducing on the left side. Now I will define what is epsilon, but I really need to introduce a plane wave on the left side. So this is now something that I'm introducing by hand in the system. And there is a reflection coefficient for the plane wave that goes back on the left side of the system. And let's say the W alpha, the W beta. Sorry. And I also have a stress tensor on the right side, where now I put a coefficient for the transmission. So now epsilon is just a parameter that I introduce because all the computations that we do will be truncated at first order in epsilon. And now what I do is that I require that my stress tensor has this form. I'm introducing this perturbation to the stress tensor in order to have an incident plane wave, a reflection, and a transmission. I put in the metric using this Pfeffer-Mangram gauge. And now this gives me a perturbation of the original metric. I truncate everything at order epsilon, and now the brain that previously was located at constant theta now will also change position. I need to allow that the brain fluctuate at order epsilon. If I do that, this means that I need again to solve Einstein's equations and Israel matching conditions, because now they are not anymore satisfied because I changed my original matrix. So what I need to do is again to impose the Israel matching conditions. Yeah, so let's say that I need to solve the problem, I need to impose Israel matching again. And then I need to impose a technical condition which is called no outgoing wave condition. It simply means that in the infrared, at the horizon of ADS space, a typical boundary condition that you need to impose is that at the horizon, there will be in general, if you consider the traceless part of the extrinsic curvature, which in two dimensions is this object, in general, this object will contain most coming in and out from the horizon, but you don't want any mode that goes out from the horizon of your spacetime. So it is a boundary condition to impose that you are turning off the modes that go out from the horizon. It is a technical condition, but it is necessary to solve the problem. So after you impose these two conditions, working at first order in epsilon, it is possible to compute to extract the transmission coefficient, because this is encoded in the stress tensor and this enters the matrix. So once you solve all the equations, you are able to find the transmission coefficient, and the result is the following. It is a simple expression. So this is the result from the holographic model for the transmission. L left and L right are the two ADS radii for the two regions, and sigma is the tension of the brain. Now, first of all, sigma is not completely arbitrary. There are some conditions to impose that I will briefly explain. So sigma is only defined in this interval holographically. The smaller bound comes from Coleman-De Luca bound for not having any nucleation of bubbles in anti-de Sitter. The upper bound comes from requiring that your two-dimensional brain, this one that you are gluing, is anti-de Sitter and is not going, is not having a transition to de Sitter. So you need to impose these two bounds. If you do that by plugging these bounds on the transmission, you also find correspondingly bounds for the transmission. Let me just check. These bounds impose that the transmission, written in terms of the central charges, is bounded by this expression. So now the first comment is that in general, from the field theory side, if you impose the average null energy condition, the transmission coefficient is bounded by this expression. This comes from computation in field theory. So first of all, you can see that this bound is consistent with the average null energy condition. In order to reach zero, this happens only in a very special case when C right over C left goes to zero, you are able to reach the zero. So this means that this condition is a very special case. It means that you really have to deplete your right system from degrees of freedom. So it is kind of strange. This is already a signal that the model is working is giving bounds consistent with the average null energy condition, but the way in which you can reach the lower bound is quite strange, is a very special situation. So this already tells you that the model is giving something consistent, but it's not the better holographic dual that you can implement. But still, it is consistent with the bounds. The transmission is a monotonically decreasing function of the tension. In this model, we have only the tension as the parameter. So of course the transmission depends on the tension. And also an observation is that in this setting, you can also compute the so-called log G, which is a quantity related to the entanglement entropy across the defect. But since the model has only 1 degree of freedom, the tension, also this quantity can be written in terms of the tension. And this means that in general, in two-dimensional interface conformal field theories, you can have log G and the transmission that vary independently. This setup is too simple. You only have one parameter, so they are related one to each other. We will see in a moment that one can generalize a bit this model to disentangle the transmission and log G, which are two essential data that describe your defects. Yeah, another trivial consistency check is that in empty ADS, you simply need to put sigma equal to zero, L left equal to L right, and this gives you transmission equal to one. Of course, without any brain, any interface, you have all transmission. Yes.
Yes. It's order epsilon square, right? So you throw it away in the computation in the bulk?
Yes.
So therefore, you're not solving as an equation, you're solving linearized as an equation?
Linearized, yes.
Epsilon equal to zero.
But this is sufficient in the end
to.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just trying to see if I understand. But then, is the zero mode in the stress tensor effectively order by order constructing the BTZ black hole horizon? Think of TL as the mass of the BTZ black hole, infinitesimally in epsilon or something?
So I think here we are starting from empty ADS and then adding plane waves. So I don't know if you have to think that this I don't think this perturbation is even building a mass. You don't really have a black hole, it is empty ADS. So, yes?
So it looks like you focus on fluctuations of the graviton, right? But you know you have universality in scattering, so in principle you can put an arbitrary scale, right?
Yes.
And do it in a probe approximation. So would you get the universality? For the transmission.
We didn't check this. So this was done in a previous paper by Chapman, Policastro, Bacas, and Dongsheng Ge. They didn't check explicitly the independence, so it would be nice to check that it is really. They are using the result that from the field theory side, you know the universality.
But even simpler computation, right? So you put a scalar.
Yes.
Set and scaling dimension delta, right? I'm talking about probe approximation. Just repeating this, you don't even need to perturb symmetric, right?
Yes, so you want to add to consider the same background, but now add a scalar field as a probe.
The claim is that the transmission coefficient is
yes.
universally independent of spin, independent of every
spin. Yes. I don't know. It could be that it was a simpler computation. I'm not sure, but one can consider all the settings and check if the universality holds holographically. The comment is not the same model, but one comment is that when I will study the thick brain model, it will be a continuous geometry with a scalar field, and apparently it could seem that studying the setting could be simpler with the scalar, but in the end I will argue that using instead the results from this model is simpler, and in this model you are using the transverse stress mode.
So I guess I was a little bit too polite. What I meant is that it's at least in your holographic model.
Yes.
Just because, the CLR that is claimed, so CL
yes.
is uniquely defined, right, by the CFT.
Yes.
So CLR is also defined just from the sort of bulk properties. So, it's hard to believe that, in a probe scale, it will be sensitive to, to correlation functions of the stress energy.
Okay.
It's hard for me to see why how the CLR will show up. I could be wrong, but that would be, I think. So, yeah, how would you interpret it against this?
Yes, but so you would use only the probe scalar to build a kind of scattering experiment?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I just do exactly the same as you did with the
the gravity, but
graviton perturbation, just put the scale, massive scale, serves a non-normalizable component to see just a standard.
Yes. I don't have any other holographically, I don't have any other comments except that one should really do the computation and check. And from the field theory, it seems that they were able to use universal properties to show this result in these papers.
I don't want to pile on, but I think the shortcoming with your proposal is that the brain is defined basically by how it interacts with the geometry. If you wanted to scatter a scalar field off of it, you'd have to introduce, you'd have to tell me how the scalar field interacts with the brain, like what it does. And
I was expecting that there is some, at least in the same brain model, there is a way of raising the brain in terms of some boundary condition.
Yeah.
So and then you can extend it to the scales. But I agree with you, right? So,
but that tends to go in your direction, and that it seems like I need to introduce extra data.
I don't believe that it's you.
But that's interesting, perhaps.
I guess it is then interesting to study if holographically one is able to reproduce this result from the field theory.
But it all sounded like that was a very perturbative calculation. Am I wrong?
This is a perturbative computation, but in these papers they use properties of the interface conformal field theories and the symmetries to argue the result. So what I'm doing here I'm not proving the universality. I'm using a result that was argued in two-dimensional interface conformal field theories to then do the computation. And in the end, the only observation is that this transmission does not depend, for example, on the frequency that I used. It is just a small check of part of the universality, but I'm not checking that if I use scalar or vector modes, I find the same result. This is something that is a future development that is interesting to study, indeed.
Can I ask you these are more technical questions. Yes. When you wrote that down, naively, it seems like I could have introduced a phase between the, whatever, the incident wave and the reflected wave, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it seems like everything is real.
Yes, right. Here I already did some convenient answers because you can really do this, but it turns out that they don't matter. Only some physical combination survive, only real combination survive. So you can really put them and check explicitly that in the end the imaginary parts cancel, or they don't matter for the computation of the transmission.
And can you comment more on the no outgoing wave condition?
I think that you don't, since it is in some ways saying that this object can have two modes, and you don't want some waves or something going out from the horizon in the infrared. I guess that since you know that your geometry stops in MTDS, stops at the horizon, you don't want anything that goes out from the horizon, I think. It is a
horizon, sorry?
So the horizon in this case is at z equal to zero in the radial coordinate. Z equal to infinity in the radial coordinate.
Ah, the Poincaré one.
The Poincaré horizon, yes. Yeah, sorry, this is in Poincaré coordinates, yes.
Is that actually a regularity condition? Like, is it that I generate a singularity on the horizon if I?
Let me think. I'm not. It seems reasonable, but I'm not completely sure because when you have this object, you really have two modes, left and right moving modes, and you are really asking that one of them is vanishing. So this is not something singular, but I'm not sure if other physical quantities or other quantities will become singular if you leave this this mode. I think reasonably, yes, this is the reason, but I don't think it appears explicitly in this object.
And again, I hate to do this, but
yes,
you're working perturbatively in epsilon, but then we're talking about a boundary condition where z or whatever that symbol goes to infinity.
Yes.
And your epsilon squared term diverges much more quickly as I go to z equals infinity. Should I worry about the calculation?
Let me think. I think that in the end we are studying all the Einstein equations and all the boundary conditions at first order at linearized level, so it could be that some terms in Z go faster. But I think this should order by order. You should be able to solve the equations consistently. I think so. Okay. I don't think you should be worried.
Maybe just a comment, but I'm not an expert. Outgoing wave conditions to me sound very similar to the quasi normal mode in folding condition at the black hole. So maybe they are just mimicking that kind of construction.
Possibly, I'm not.
So you have two more, you have left and yeah, you want one, like taking.
Is it the opposite? The quasi normal mode leads out. My guess is closer to a regularity condition because it is actually an extremal horizon, and when you perturb the space, those tend to be sort of fragile. I don't know.
No, but me neither. I was not. yeah.
Okay. So I think these were the main comments. So since. Now let me then briefly give you a slightly more general result, and then in the last part go to the thick brain model. So Karch and collaborators in the last year studied an extension of this single brain model, where now, instead of having just one brain, you put two brains. And the idea is that they wanted to have a more general setup where you can disentangle log G and the transmission. So here is a picture of the setup, and then I will give you the result they find. So you still have your asymptotic left and right conformal field theories with the brain, but now you introduce in between another brain, and you are now gluing these two brains together, and at the end you want to fuse the two brains. So this has again ADS, it is again Poincaré ADS with L left, L right radii. In the middle there is a central region which has not an asymptotic boundary, with some intermediate central ADS radius. And in practice, you do a very similar computation where now you introduce a second brain. And the outcome of the computation, you send again plane waves from this boundary, and you want to study the final transmission at the other side on the other asymptotic conformal field theory. And the outcome of the result is very simple, because it is a simple extension of the previous computation for what concerns the result, which means that the computation, if sigma 1 and sigma 2 are the tensions of the two brains, the result is practically the same, except that now you have the sum of the tensions instead of the original tension. But if you do the computation of log G, in the end is some quantity G that does not depend, is not proportional to sigma 1 plus sigma 2. It depends on a more complicated expression. So this means that they are able to, in this model, to disentangle the two quantities. You are able to vary log G independently of the transmission. Also in this setup, you can study the bounds for the tension, and the conclusions are very similar. But what will be important for us is that starting from this result, the important point will be to use this result, which is just telling you that you sum the tensions, to now generalize this result to a more general case where you have n brains instead of only two brains. So using associativity and similar arguments, you can guess that for a set of n brains, the transmission will simply be given by repeating this procedure by an expression where you sum over all the tensions. Now imagine to have a set of n brains, and the final transmission will be given by an expression of this form. And now what we want to do for the thick brain model will be to do a continuum limit of this set of brains to reproduce a continuous geometry. So let me briefly mention what is the holographic setup that I have now in mind. So the thick brain model is a model given by Einstein gravity plus a scalar field, a dilaton field, where the action still well, you can formulate the discussion in general in n plus one dimensions, but then the results that I will compute will apply due to the universality in two dimensions. So you take an action of this form where V is a potential, and you have a solution is a continuous geometry. It is a continuous class of geometries of this form. So you need to have in mind a picture of this kind, similar to empty ADS space, but now there is A of theta is a scale factor that gives some warping of the geometry. The geometry is something of this kind, where this is the theta coordinate, and again, these are ADS2, ADSN slices in general, n plus one dimensions. But now you also have a dilaton field that only depends on the theta coordinate. And due to the dilaton field, when you study how the dilaton behaves at the boundary, in general, this will give a jump. This will jump between one side of the boundary, which is this one, and the other side of the boundary, which is this one. And the jump of the dilaton field at the boundary will effectively give a jump of the coupling constant of the dual theory. So in this picture, there is no brain in the geometry. This is just a way to write a foliation of anti de Sitter space with a warping, this A of theta. But the dilaton field gives a jump of the coupling constant at the boundary. And so at this point, there is an interface that separates the two components of the boundary. This boundary is defined by some constant minus theta zero and some other constant plus theta zero. Theta runs along these various slices. And this is a continuous geometry with a dilaton field that is generically believed to be dual to two-dimensional interface conformal field theories. If you want to have in mind a specific example, an example is given by Janus ADS3. It is a solution that comes from the dimensional reduction of a solution in type 2B supergravity in 10 dimensions defined on this space. M4 is an internal manifold. And once you do the reduction to three dimensions, the solution Janus ADS3 is a non-supersymmetric solution now, but comes from a top-down model in 10 dimensions and has been studied by Backwood, Perle, and other authors. And it shows some nice properties, some stability properties against certain classes of perturbations. So this is just a good setup that you can have in mind for these holographic duals. So what we did in this work was to study the transmission coefficient for this class of geometries of this form. Gamma bar is the geometry that you put on the ADS n slices, and A of theta is a scale factor that gives a warping when you move from one slice to the other. Now, the point is that if you want to do, so in principle, the computation works in a similar way as for the brain model. You need to put a plane wave at the boundary, you need to study how it is transmitted on the other side, use the Pfeffermann-Gram coordinates and do impose the and solve now the Einstein's equations. You don't have Israel matching because there isn't a discrete brain in the system. You need to solve Einstein's equations. But it turns out that the computation, the direct computation, is very difficult because Pfeffermann-Gram coordinates break down in the proximity of the interface. It is a known result. And so it is really a technical obstruction when you are close to the interface. So you can still prepare your plane waves far from the interface, where the geometry still becomes asymptotically anti-de-Sitter. But it is hard to study the Einstein's equations in this setting. For example, if you have in mind the Janus geometry contains some deformation parameter. Let's call this B. That when B is equal to zero gives back MTADS. But in general, for arbitrary B, the Pfeffermann-Gram expansion, even far from the interface, is really hard, and it is difficult to keep the expressions at all orders in B. Therefore, the direct computation is not convenient. However, there is a trick to compute this transmission coefficient, and the idea is to use a discretization. So I will give the idea of how the method works and then give you the result. The idea is that we have this continuous geometry, and now we want to replace the geometry with a discrete model where something of this form. So you need to have in mind that I am now replacing this continuous geometry with this discrete model where so all these regions are empty ADS space. In all these regions, I have a brain of tension sigma 1, a brain of tension sigma 2, and so at each region, when I jump from one region to the other, I have a brain that separates the regions. Each region has a fixed ADS radius, L left, then let's say L1, L2, etc., until you reach L right at the end. So what I'm doing is to replace this continuous geometry with this discrete model, and I require that, and so I have n brains, and at the end I want to require that my discrete model composed by these various regions of empty ADS space plus the brains in the continuum limit when I send n to infinity, they reproduce the continuous geometry. So I impose that this setup in the end going to infinity limit reproduces this scale factor for the continuous geometry. So what I'm really doing is to map a continuous geometry with a scalar field to a discrete geometry with discrete brains that make the jump between one region and the other. And okay, there are some arguments to map the stress tensor for the continuous geometry with a scalar to the stress tensor of this geometry with the brains. But let me go towards the result. So what I'm employing is that for n brains, I have this result that the transmission coefficients simply sum. And now I argue that in the continuum limit, the sum of the tensions become an integral. Let's say you can do a change of coordinates. Let's say where this y coordinate is non-compact and still runs along all the slices. And I want to replace the sum of the tensions with some integral over this dy of a tension density. In order to find the tension density, this can be found when I require that my discrete geometry reproduces the continuous geometry. This gives me an effective ADS radius that changes along all the slices, and an effective tension density that changes, that parameterizes the various jumps across the brains. So, exploiting this fact, I can compute the transmission coefficient. And let me. So, I can give the result for the Janus geometry to have an explicit setting. So, let me just copy. So, if you employ this trick to the Janus geometry, there is a simple analytic expression. Where we can just check some statements. The plot is something like this. So for the Janus geometry, when this is a deformation parameter, when this deformation is equal to zero, this gives back empty anti-de-Sitter space. And indeed, in this case, you find that the transmission is one. You don't have any interface, and the plane waves just go through the space-time region. When b is equal to 1, the Janus geometry becomes infinitely strongly coupled. The dilaton field becomes linear. And therefore, and we see that the transmission goes to 0, which is something that you expect, because the theory is the wall given by the interface is so strong due to the infinite coupling that the plane waves are not able to go across the interface. Now a nice, so this is specifically for the Janus geometry, but more generically, you can take this expression where you replace the sum of the tensions with this expression, and this holds for any geometry of this form, not only for the Janus case. For any geometry that only depends on theta, and where the dilaton only depends on theta, you can employ this trick and find the tension in this way. And again, the tensions are still bounded by Coleman-De-Lucia bound, by the requirement of not having a transition to the sitter. If you employ these bounds in the continuum limit, it is possible to show that in general the transmission satisfy this condition, which is the same given by the average null energy condition. So this means that in general, in these models, you are now also able to reach zero, the lower bound. So this is a signal that this thick brain model is behaving better than the thick brain, because you are also able to reach the zero without imposing any strange condition on the degrees of freedom of the right theory, and also this setting does not have discrete brains, and you can do better matching with the field theory side, since some solutions come from higher dimensions. So this seems to be a better defined model. Yes, so it is a parameter that describes. So you should write specifically what are the solutions for A of theta and phi for Janus, which are some expression written in terms of elliptic functions. So in the literature, usually this parameter is called gamma, and here I'm just doing, in case you are more familiar with that, a mapping of this form. Gamma is the usual deformation parameter of Janus. Anyway, it is a parameter such that when B or gamma go to zero, you just go back to empty ADS, and the dilaton becomes just a constant. So you don't have any jump, you don't have any interface. When b goes to 1, or gamma goes to 1 over square root of 2, the theory, the dilaton becomes linear and divergent at both boundaries, and the theory has a coupling constant that becomes infinitely strongly coupled. This b in general measures how you are deforming empty ADS with any interface and a dilaton field in some way.
In the thin brain, should I think of that as the number of brain I'm putting in?
Let me think. So when you do the mapping from the discrete to the continuous case, when you do the mapping, effectively you have an ADS radius which is dependent on the y coordinate, which means that also the cosmological constant depends on y, and also the tension. And these quantities in Janus depends in general on the deformation parameter. So I think that in some way the deformation enters in the fact that this ADS radius and the tension change with B. So the way in which these tensions and the ADS radii behave are functions of B and take into account this deformation of the continuous geometry. So let me, since the time I think is finished, let me just conclude with future developments. One future development would be to, here we did everything in three bulk dimensions to use this universality of two-dimensional interface conformal field theories. It would be nice, first of all, to check if using other kinds of excitations you are able to find really this universality in 2D and 3D bulk. It would be nice to go also to higher dimensions. Now you don't have any more the universality, but you can try to compute the transmission coefficient directly in 10 dimensions. Now you will need to do more hard computations, but you can try to see what is the transmission coefficient for these setups, and if there is still a way to do a mapping to a discrete model. Let me also mention that if you take this geometry and you do a double Vic rotation, so you can send y, that I'm introducing here, y to IT, and the ADS n slices to Euclidean ADS. If you do that, these geometries become the Friedman-Robinson-Walker geometries, and the equations of motion really become the Friedman-Robinson-Walker equations. So it could be interesting to study propagation of waves or possibly quantum mechanically particle production in these systems. It could be that this phenomena corresponds to the transmission for this setup. There can be other directions, but I think we stop here and thank you for the attention.
Any questions?
Okay, can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
I think I can ask this question ultimately propagating over there. So in your formula for n brains,
yes.
Why there is no dependence on that C?
I think it is really an outcome of the computation in the sense that
this. You did really do the computation without approximations, assuming that. Because the way you set up the computation was just a single brain, it looks like you need to have the asymptotic regions where you have a really incoming, set up the incoming wave, you measure the outgoing wave. Here it's less clear that you have all the asymptotic regions.
Yeah.
You were saying you do the real computation, no LC.
Exactly, yes. So other people, Karch and Baig, some months ago did the computation, and exactly, they have seen that there was no dependence on LC. But log G depends instead explicitly on this intermediate radius. So it is another way to see that they are not, they are disentangled in this system. You can vary them independently.
Any further questions? Not, let's thank Stefan again.
Thank you.